What are we starting with this week?
A
YouTube comment.
Yes, you're gosh darn right. It says, it's from Jeff. It says, wow, 54 years of having no idea I have aphantasia.
Right? It's, yeah. Wow. It's an incredible discovery. This is why I don't like reading books that much.
Oh, right, because you can't see. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I thought you just meant, like, I don't like reading books because I hate incredible discoveries about myself.
I discover things all the time.
Yeah, no, so that's on our aphantasia episode, which definitely should check that one out. We've also got the aphantasia thing we did with a bunch of YouTubers, which is pretty cool. So definitely check out both of those.
We did do that.
And before we actually get into it, I just want to ask a question to our audience. Head down into the YouTube chat if you're there, if you're listening to it. Head to YouTube and let us know. Do you have aphantasia?
Yes.
Do you? Cool. Okay. Well, let's start the show.
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutbirth.
Yes, you are.
Hi. Welcome.
This week, we're talking about black people in science.
Are we?
Well, black person in science. Well, black person who did science.
Okay.
Okay.
A few dimensions.
Get more specific here.
Get a little bit more. So, have you guys heard of a man named Benjamin Banneker?
No.
I know a Benjamin.
That's probably the point. Yeah. You know a Benjamin? So, this is an episode that, I'm going to be honest, I started researching it and I was like, oh, this seems interesting. And then it just got more and more irritating.
I mean, this has happened once before when you were going to research and do a story about all the billionaire space people. And then you got so angry about it that you stopped the story and I did the story instead.
Yeah. That was anger for a slightly different reason.
Okay.
This, I mean, I guess both of them come from the same place, structural inequality affecting people and science. So yeah, similar kind of rage. But this one is about a man who was, you know, he was born in 1731, November 9th.
Oh, it was a while ago.
Yes. Yeah. He was born
He's very old.
I know.
He died.
I hope he's dead. Oh.
Oh, that's now. The end of the story. Don't ruin it.
It's not necessarily the end of the story. You don't know. He could have had sort of successful afterlife. You have no idea.
True. A posthumous Nobel Prize.
Well, so he was a black man. He was a free black man, actually.
Good news.
Which is...
That is good news. Especially for 1700s.
Yeah, it's very good. It is very good news, yeah.
Sorry,
it just seems like quite of an understatement.
That is good news.
That's good news.
I'm rather pleased to hear that.
Benjamin Banneker was a black man who was free, born in 1731, which, as Luke says, is very good news.
What, that he was born in 1731?
No, that's bad news. That's bad news. So he was born in Maryland. We know how to say that now. Maryland, in a place called Ellicott's Mills. And he was the son of an ex-slave named Robert and his wife, Mary. Yeah, who was apparently mixed race. Now, this is the issue. I found people saying that, oh, there's not strong evidence that his maternal grandmother was white or whatever. But I've also, every other place says, yes, she was. This is the issue that got me a little bit pissed off, is that researching this, there's not a lot of great information about him. Mm. We'll find out why towards the end. But there's not a lot of great information about him. But he did do a lot of cool stuff. So I'll give you a bit of background on his family history. So first, let's start with his two grandparents on his mother's side. There was Molly Welsh, who was an Englishwoman, who was an indentured servant. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not quite slavery. What an indentured servant is, it's basically someone, generally it's given as a punishment. And it was quite common back then to give it as a punishment and send people to the colonies where they would work basically as an indentured servant. They would work for someone without really pay for however long, and then once their indentured servitude, their sort of punishment was done, they would be given a plot of land and some money so that they could then become sort of self-sustaining. So it's kind of like the prison system that we've got today, except they got something when they got out of it.
Oh.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because it's definitely worse to be given a your punishment is that you're a slave. Mm. But then it's also got a better ending, because the ending for being in prison is often like then being poor and having to commit crime and then going back to prison.
Going back to prison again.
You also do have to work in prison as well.
Or study.
Yeah. Work or study.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the opportunities when you come out of prison, it's anyway.
Yes, absolutely. Not nice.
Yeah. So not to say that indentured servitude is better than our current prison system. I'm just saying that there are differences there.
Well, but wouldn't it be nice if we just like, in order to, even just from a purely like wanting to make the society safer for everyone, someone gets out of prison and they get a little starter packet of money because they haven't got anything.
Yeah.
That'd be
if
cool.
If they don't have anywhere to go, you get given accommodation, maybe.
For
and you
a
get set up
time.
For a few jobs, and you have that for when you're on probation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a little transitional period.
Yeah.
Hard to do politically, but probably would make things a bit better.
Yeah, try convincing Republicans to go for something that says, hey, what you get rewarded for committing a crime.
Giving criminals money.
Because then poor people will just commit crimes to get out of poverty. Yeah. And we can't have that.
Mm.
Anyway, moving on. So you had a grandmother, Molly Welsh. She was an indentured servant. She was falsely accused of theft and sent to the colonies to be an indentured servant. And then she obviously got out of that towards the end. She then had she was given a plot of land, a farm. She had some money. She got some slaves. And one of those slaves was Banka, who says he was from royalty in a tribe in West Africa. And then he was then freed and they got together. And they married and they had kids. So
he was freed by her?
Freed by her, yeah.
Okay.
Well,
because she fancied him. Is that why? Because that's what it sounds like.
Well, yeah, so she, but what happened was she earned her freedom. Then she rented land in Baltimore County. And then she bought two slaves to help farm that land. And then a few years after she got the farming up to sort of snuff, she freed both of the slaves. One of those slaves she had a thing for.
Oh. Right. Okay. Yeah. So she's freed the ones she didn't have a thing for too. It's very good of her.
Well, you couldn't just free one of them, could you? That'd be a bit.
You could if, I mean, that's how it worked, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, sure.
You could
do no, absolutely. Like. I know. But I mean, I suppose as a moral person, you couldn't really own slaves. But if we're going to draw, if we're drawing the bar, so I mean, to begin with, like, if that's where the bar is, okay. So interestingly, this is difficult. There are sort of conflicting records on this, that there's not necessarily a strong confirmation that Banneker's grandfather was from royalty. But I have heard that. I also heard that apparently he had purely African ancestry, and the sort of Molly Welsh, the white English woman, wasn't necessarily his grandmother. There's conflicting issues. It's from the 1700s. The records for this time weren't absolutely fantastic, especially for a black man, you know? So just moving on quickly from that, Molly and Banka had kids, and then one of their daughters ended up having kids, and that became Benjamin, right?
Right.
Benjamin Banneker, or Benjamin Banneker, because that was back again when people just did not have solid spellings for the goddamn names. there's basically sort of family farm. So they have the farm, they buy that. They end up buying the farm. They have kids, all of that sort of stuff. And Benjamin is born quite a bit later, right? So the point here is that he was born free because his grandparents weren't in slavery. That meant that their kids weren't in slavery. And because those kids were born free, that meant their kids were also born free.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky, that's very lucky to not be enslaved. Very, very lucky, given what was going on at the time, obviously. But he wasn't. So, you know, he managed to sort of live a life that was probably quite different from most African Americans at the time, or really at that point, probably Africans. So he was taught to read by his grandmother, the English woman. And he went to a Quaker school for a very short time, but mostly he taught himself. And he, the school that he went to was in one room. It was mixed race. And he went there for only a couple years, maybe not very long. And then he was interested in maths and mechanics and a lot of different things. He would do calculations and experiments and build things himself. So he really forced through his own education, right? Like, he obviously at the time he was not a white man. Still, he's probably not a white man. he wasn't able to, yeah, still, no, it doesn't change. So he wasn't able to really go through the same sort of routes of education that other people were able to at the time necessarily. And so a sort of biographer, Elizabeth Ross Haynes, wrote that he found time to study all the books he could borrow. And he became well-versed in topics in sciences and humanities. He did a lot of, so he wasn't just sort of studying science, he was also studying sort of social issues and things like that. And there is an account from the 19th century from the Maryland Historical Society that says he was an acute observer whose active mind was constantly receiving impulses from what was taking place around him. So this is an excerpt from one of his journals. He basically looked into what was going on around him. He was just constantly asking questions.
Right. Trying to find that answers. Sounds like he had like an overstimulation condition or something, the way it was described.
Well, I mean, I think it's just a fanciful way to describe someone who is constantly asking questions, being like, oh, how does that work? Right. How does this work? And he sought out the answers himself and had the privilege of not being a slave. Mm. So he was able to, well, he wasn't necessarily able to go to school and learn all this stuff. He learned to read, which is sort of the gateway to learning lots of different, being able to teach yourself, really. Mm. So one of his journals from 1797 said, standing at my door, I heard the discharge of a gun, and in 4 or 5 seconds of time after the discharge, the small shot came rattling about me, one or two of which struck the house, which plainly demonstrates that the velocity of sound is greater than that of a cannon bullet. Right.
So, oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's like this kind of stuff that he's sort of figuring out himself. So he wasn't like a formal scientist. He didn't have formal training. He didn't go to university and get a degree. He was just kind of a guy that learned a lot about a lot of different things and constantly taught himself, you know?
Yeah. Just observed stuff.
Happening. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's all he could do at the time. So he did a lot of work when he was quite young. So he built an irrigation system for the farm, like his family farm. And when he was 22, he built a clock made entirely out of wood. Now what happened was someone, I think, visited with a sort of working sort of pocket watch or a working sort of clock, and he studied the mechanics of this clock, and he then carved it out. He carved the same mechanics out of wood build a working clock. And this is, people will say that this was the first clock built in America, made out of American materials and all that sort of stuff, which isn't necessarily true, but it is one of the first clocks built in America, which is pretty cool, right? One of the first clocks ever manufactured in America.
Where did all the clocks come from before? Switzerland.
They generally used the sun at that point.
Brought a watch for him to look at.
Yeah, so clocks were very new.
But where did that come from, if not? So, like, was it imported?
Yeah, so bear in mind, this was the 1700s. So the colonies were first being established. People would come over.
Oh, I see. Right. I'm not that clued up on American history, to be honest.
Okay. So this is so he was born in, 1731. So 1776 was the
Declaration
of Independence. So the colonies were still established there, but they were still kind of under British rule at that point. And people were sort of like, it was a place where people would go over. Britain wanted to establish more colonies there, you know, and I guess exterminate the people that were already living there, and you know, just push people over. So people were traveling over there, and obviously you had the transatlantic slave trade to make sure that they could build and farm and all the stuff that they just needed to use other people to do. So yeah, people were sort of traveling, sort of there at that time. Yeah, and because again, industry there wasn't as established as it was in I guess sort of Britain. Stuff would be imported, and they had to start building all of these different things, especially because clocks were new. You're not going to have like a clock manufacturing place for this brand new sort of technology, you know?
Yeah.
So that clock apparently ran for over 50 years until it ran about the time that he died. I'll get into that story in a little bit as well.
Do you know what it was powered by?
I'm not sure, actually.
Yeah.
Not sure. It's again, it's not that I've not tried to look into it.
Sure.
Information on him is very... Take a lot of what I say in this episode with a grain of salt. I'm trying to get it across to you that there's sort of conflicting evidence, this and that. I've tried to keep in this in the episode only what I'm... Like, multiple sources have said.
Yeah.
You can check all the sources in the description. But, like, again, I don't know how much of this is to be fully believed. But there seems to be some stories out there, you know, that are fairly solid. So he taught himself astronomy, and he was able to figure out when lunar and solar eclipses were going to happen, which is pretty cool. You know, he was able to do that sort of math himself. And then his dad died when he was 27, when Beneker was 27. And then he started running the farm with his mom and his sisters. And so they had horses, cows, beehives, the garden, all of that stuff. So he just kind of lived on the farm, and that's how he lived his life. It was just sort of self-sustaining, but quite simple. And it gave him time to sort of think about the sort of sciences and study things and just answer little questions for himself, you know, things like that. He didn't go out there as a scientist to sort of study the world and do X, Y, Z. He was quite focused on his farm and figuring out basically practical applications to what he was doing then. And he apparently used crop rotation irrigation techniques that were not common in the US at that time, and they wouldn't catch on for like decades. And so he had they were growing tobacco, so they had really profitable crops because he was using techniques that were quite advanced for the time. And so he had he was able to make more profit from his land because he was being sort of smart about it in ways that other people weren't. And there was a family that lived, I think, sort of next door called the Ellicotts, who were white. And they were not racist, which is fantastic. They would happily work with him. They would sell his stuff, and they did a lot of help him. And during the Revolutionary War, he swapped the tobacco out for wheat, and he started selling that to the sort of American soldiers. Mm-hmm. And an interesting story that I heard about him, which is pretty solid as being true. You guys remember the cicadas, Brood X?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you know about them?
Did we talk about them in a live show?
We did, yeah.
I do. I vaguely remember.
These are the things that go underground for like 17 years, and then they come up to have sex and have babies, and then they disappear again.
You are right. Not all of them go underground for 17 years. No, no.
For some years, yeah.
No, you're right. Not all of them go underground for 17 years, but brood eggs do. And if you think about that, that's something that we know now. We take that knowledge for granted. You can just Google it and it comes up. But understanding for 17 years, that's a long, long time. Okay. If you're trying to notice a pattern over 17 years, if something happens once and then 17 years it happens again, and then another 17 years, 34 years have passed at that point.
Yeah, you're not even necessarily paying attention to how many years have passed, let alone what's happened in those years.
Exactly, right? So trying to figure that out is really interesting that, thinking about figuring that out, because for it to happen four times, right, that's an adult lifetime, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a long time. It's what? It's 68 years?
It's one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about, like, him looking at, like, lunar patterns and being able to, like, predict, like, events in the sky and stuff. Like, I think we really don't necessarily take for granted how tough some stuff was to like, so for example, imagine you wanting to see how many days it takes the moon to go back to being a full moon, right? Well, if you want to do that before you've got computers, before you've got even like any digital thing, you have to you have to tick off how many days it is, but then you have to remember whether you've ticked off that day or not. Mm. And you have to tick every day and never tick the day twice and keep a record of those things. And it's like those things that we've like just exported out or externalized out to like a much more reliable but simplistic device. Like a digital device is very reliable. It's more simplistic. In a certain type of way, but it's incredibly reliable at doing certain specific tasks that we're actually not particularly good at doing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And also what's interesting about the digital thing as well is that it's much easier to presumably to store digital data rather than physical data, because physical data exists in one place. Yeah. Digital information can exist anywhere.
Copied lots of times.
You can copy lots of times. You can put it on the internet so it can be accessible to basically anyone with a connection if you want it to be. And This is the kind of knowledge that needs to be built off of knowledge from before, because if you think about it, 17, like, you need to see people that are tracking this for a long time, and there's other cicada broods that come out at different times as well. But what he did was in 1749, he was I think 17 at the time. He was 17 in 1749, and at that point, Brood X had emerged, shouting, screaming, having sex, dying, leaving their little basically what's left when a sort of cicada sort of dies, like the sort of
like the shell.
Yeah, the shell.
Yeah.
And he at that time thought they were a plague of locusts, which are basically what happens to grass. I think essentially what happens to grasshoppers when food becomes scarce.
Yeah.
They fly and eat everything.
Yeah, so that's a fun thing that people don't generally know, is that grasshoppers and locusts are the same animal.
Not even different stages of a life cycle, no. Just under different... similar to how salamanders and axolotls are essentially juvenile salamanders that through specific conditions remain in a sort of permanently juvenile state for their entire lives.
Mm.
Don't lose their sort of...
Oh, wow.
Gilly
things. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're nice. Philly gillies. So Banneker wrote, "The first great locust year that I can remember was 1749. I was then about 17 years of age when thousands of them came and was creeping up the trees and bushes. I then imagined they came to eat and destroy the fruit of the earth and would occasion a famine in the land. I therefore began to kill and destroy them, but soon saw that my labor was in vain, therefore gave over my pretension." And he basically figured out, worked out how they operated, that they would sort of dig into the ground and then wait there for a while or whatever. He's just sort of studied them and watched what they did, and he sort of wrote down an account of what was going on, which is really cool. I think way back then, a black man doing that back then at the time where he could have very easily been a slave is...
And without a load of education awesome. As well.
Oh yeah, and being self-educated, it's fantastic. And this is again, Janet Barber, who published a paper, basically the first paper that documented his handwritten notes on the cicada, said, "History books often talk about the wooden clock and something else that's coming up in a bit, but there's hardly any information regarding the work he did with the cicada." So he saw the first cicada swarm in 1749, and then he watched three more throughout his lifetime, 1766, 1783, and 1800. And he said, so that if I may venture so to express it, "Their periodical return is 17 years, but they, like the comets, make but a short stay with us. The female has a sting in her tail as sharp and hard as a thorn, with which she perforates the branches of trees, and then in them holes lays eggs. The branch soon dies and fall." Gosh, people wrote differently.
Ye old.
"The branch soon dies and fall. Then the egg, by some occult cause, emerges." Jesus Christ, spell things in English. Oh. It's everything
it was
is spelled.
Like 300 years ago.
It was before they standardized spelling. And then he says, "The egg, by some occult cause, emerges a great depth into the earth and then continues for the space of 17 years as aforesaid." So he figured out the sort of cycle of brood X was 17 years, which he had
that's
four
impressive.
Over. That's insane. Yeah. And he watched them and he was like, okay, so the female lays in the eggs in the branch falls to the ground, then they go into the ground, they burrow into the ground, they wait there for 17 years, then they come back out. Like, that's an incredible thing to have just, no equipment.
Yeah.
Nothing. Just using his eyes, just watching. And a lot of time. You got to think about how, the meticulous notes that he must have had to keep for all of these observations. And one of the most famous stories, the one that I said was coming up in a bit, was surveying DC. So this is something that a lot of people know. There's some misinformation along with it, but the actual story is pretty solid and pretty interesting as well. So as I said, there was the neighbors called the Ellicotts, and one of them, I think, it was basically they bought the land next to him. They started building sort of their whole thing that they had going on there, and essentially they had a mill. And Banneker was fascinated with it and would come and see it every day because he was like, how does this mill work? So interesting, so cool. And so they had a good relationship from that. Now, George Ellicott was interested in astronomy and sort of shared information with Banneker, and they had conversations about that. But he also was building the foundations for sort of atlases and whatnot. And his cousin... Major Andrew Ellicott had asked George to help him survey a new city that was going to be built, a capital city, the center of the US, one could say. And so George Ellicott actually sort of brought in Banneker to help him do this, and Banneker was instrumental in surveying the land for DC that would become Washington DC, which is pretty incredible that a black man at that time in the 1700s, 1791, was instrumental in the sort of formation of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So what it means by surveying the land is essentially it's essentially kind of like looking at the land, and like there's it's measuring the distances, seeing like the sort of hills and valleys and whatnot. Mm-hmm. D.C. is obviously on sort of along a river, and they're basically figuring out, okay, how can we build this? Where's this going to go? Measurements and all that. He didn't lay out the plans for it specifically. That was other people. But he did the initial sort of surveying of the land such that the plans could be made to build DC, which is incredible. I don't know, Americans might know this. Americans might be taught this, but I feel like if you're an American and this is the first time you're finding out about this, that a black man was instrumental in sort of surveying the land for DC, then it's a bit messed up, isn't it? It's a bit messed up that like no one's really necessarily heard of him. I mean, obviously we're outside the US, but still, I feel like a man who, during the time of slavery, was a sort of a man of science, a very intelligent person. If that's not something that is being spoken about openly, that's a bit odd, especially because we're going to get into this in a bit. But there's something that really, really wound me up when I was researching this. Mm. Like as I said, he was instrumental in sort of the creation of Washington, D.C., from just some land to a full-blown sort of city. And you guys know who Thomas Jefferson is, right?
Yeah. Know the name, yeah.
What do you know about Thomas Jefferson?
Very little.
He was actually normal size.
I thought he was a giant. So
no, he was normal size.
Surprised.
Just in the middle of those two. So yeah. Thomas Jefferson became the president of the United States. Had a lot of slaves. Also, you know, had sex with them. With dubious consent, supposedly. And, you know, he was not necessarily super against slavery, owning a number of them himself, right? Yeah? So, God, there's going to be Americans in the comments saying, oh, well, actually, I don't care if you own slaves and you don't want to give up your slaves and you also non-consensually have sex with your slaves, shut up. We're gonna get into him not being that hot on stopping slavery in a sec, because
I also don't think you necessarily really need to defend Thomas Jefferson at this point.
He's dead. He's long dead.
He's not gonna see this. It's
really
fine.
Matter.
I hope he sees this, King. We'll tell you what, Thomas Jefferson probably hoped that the King didn't see it.
Mm.
America.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Very good.
Thank you.
Oh yes.
Gosh. I really need to, gotta tailor these jokes to my audience.
No, we need to watch Hamilton again.
Yeah. Okay, let's stop this right now. We'll all watch Hamilton. Right. I'll give you the background. I told you that Banneker, he was not just a man of science. I say Banneker or Banneker because it's spelled both ways.
Yes.
He was not just a man of science. He was also a man that looked at social issues. And being a black man in the 1700s, You want to think he probably had a bit of an issue with slavery, right?
Oh, did he?
Yes.
Okay, thank goodness. I thought you were going to say he didn't.
Oh, boy, no.
Plot twist.
So he is, because he'd surveyed DC, he had sort of a national stage. People knew, oh, this black man did this black man did that.
But, oh, really? So he was known at the time?
He was known at the time.
Was it controversial?
Yeah, of course it was, man. Slavery was still happening. This was a point where the idea was that the black race was inhuman.
Yeah.
Subhuman.
Sure.
Yeah. So some people may have been fine, like, you know, the Ellicotts. And to be honest, I don't know about how fine they were. I've not heard any stories of them being sort of explicitly racist. But then, you know, at the time, you never know. They could have still harbored some sort of views of like, oh, well, he's got some white in him, so maybe that's what's making him sort of,
right.
And that's where I'm sort of cautious, because I also saw reports saying that his ancestry was purely African, and it would make sense that if someone was purely African, you would inject a little bit of whiteness in there to make them
make sense of why they're achieving things.
Exactly, right? But then again, I'm not saying that he was purely African, because I've seen a lot of sources say that his maternal grandmother was a white English woman, so I'm going to stick with that, okay? And so because he did the sort of surveying of DC, people knew about him, and it actually got it actually got him to be in correspondence with Jefferson. So the Georgetown Weekly Ledger wrote about him and his surveying of DC. They said, "An Ethiopian whose abilities as a surveyor and an astronomer clearly proves that Mr. Jefferson's concluding that that race of men were void of mental endowments was without foundation." Essentially, Thomas Jefferson said, "Oh, black people, they dumb."
And it's pretty cool that the local newspaper was saying, "Thomas Jefferson's clearly incorrect because this guy is really good at stuff."
Yeah.
I think that's cool. I'm surprised that a newspaper was going out on a limb and going out to probably predominantly white readership and saying that.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you.
Mm.
The bar is through the floor.
I agree.
I know you agree. I feel like we need to say this, that when you're saying it is good that they did that.
No, like, I don't mean it's good.
No, I know.
What I mean, though, is that they didn't do what you I just alluded to, the possibility of going, a black man who is achieving things because of his white grandmother's blood in him.
Mm.
Like, that. Like, my expectations were lower than that. And so then, because my expectations were so low, that was like, oh.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. I know that. I know that full well. But
and Thomas Jefferson president at the time, or no?
So, no, this was actually about, I think, a decade before he was president. So this was 1791. I think he was president in 1801 or something. But he was vice president shortly after that under John Adams.
Ah.
Information I do actually know from Hamilton. this is the thing. Jefferson obviously was a bit of a big old bloody racist, because we love that, don't we? He was a racist, and he said, obviously, black men stupid, and here's a black man who
direct quote.
Honestly,
probably actually,
like, here's, come on, man.
Roll the tape.
And here's Benjamin being like, hey, I'm black and also, like, not stupid, so, you know, just gonna keep on doing my stuff. And this is the bit that really started to wind me up, because it's just like, right, I understand that slavery is bad regardless, okay? Like, we don't need to say, like, oh, slavery is bad. But in my head, I at least want to believe that, like, the people that are so for it, like, genuinely do believe that black people are lesser. Like, if you've got a situation wherein you can either have someone who's a white supremacist who thinks that black people are, like, who thinks that black people are lesser and genuinely believes it,
mm-hmm.
or you've got someone who just wants cheap, well, basically free labor, and so will lie to everyone themselves. And themselves and say black people are lesser just to justify it.
Mm-hmm.
This one to me feels worse. I'm not trying to make any sort of almost objectively this one is morally worse, but to me it feels worse that someone has evidence in their face of, like, because I put it this way, I'd like to live in a world where, oh, maybe it was just an accident and they actually genuinely believed that black people were lesser because, you know, they didn't let them sort of prove that they weren't. But the fact that there was a black guy back then who, like, we have a documentation, like, not even just, like, someone that wasn't very well known, that surveyed the land for DC, that the future president of the United States fully knew about and was in correspondence with, and, like, had been, like, this guy who had been, like, sort of spoken about as being intelligent and being well read, like, the fact that they had a man like that at that time who was doing all of this,
mm-hmm.
it's just like, how at all can you make the argument that, like, you know, the black race is they're subhuman if you literally have a black guy who's like, hey, no, I'm not though. I mean, like, yes, obviously, like,
I'm pretty
again,
clever.
Like, obviously, none of that would justify slavery to any degree.
Yeah.
No, but you're right, because it's like, it's not anywhere near the same level or the same thing. But, like, it's like, I've been studying economics and found out, like, a bunch of the justifications that are used for some of our economic sort of policies are based on things that aren't true. And it's like, well, I would rather you actually genuinely believe these things and then just haven't really given enough thought to it, than you just want to behave the way you want to behave and then use, but that probably is what it is. They just use the explanation that allows them to continue doing the thing without feeling too bad about it. But they fully know it's not true.
Upon sort of further introspection right now, I think I understand why that is, that feels better. It's because I think that if you think that someone genuinely believes something, it feels like you can convince them out of it because by giving them evidence.
Or at least that they are not being disingenuous themselves.
Well, the being disingenuous, I think, honestly, in the scope of slavery, not being genuine is sort of dwarfed there. So, no, it feels like them being disingenuous. To me, I'm like, it feels like them being disingenuous is an issue. And it is, to an extent, but also it's really not, because regardless of whether you're being genuine or not, slavery bad, right?
Mm.
Like, slavery bad. Mm-hmm. We can all agree on that.
Yep.
I think
the official position of this podcast.
We're going to set up so long to say
it. I'm so sorry, everyone. I'm so sorry it's taken us so long.
Corey was on the fence, but we brought him round.
After some off-pod discussions.
You guys are right. You know what? You had some solid arguments. Ever since... And really, what really pushed me over the edge was finding out about this man. Because otherwise...
This man's contribution to cicada research really pushed you over the edge.
It really did, because otherwise, no, seriously though, being genuine is dwarfed by slavery, obviously. And I think my issue with it is that it makes you feel like, okay, well, hold on, people are doing these awful things. Like, there's no way you can sort of explain it to yourself of like, oh, people are doing awful things, yes, and disgusting and evil, like purely evil. You can't explain it to yourself in the simplest way of like, but maybe like with evidence and convincing and through strong arguments, people could be convinced out of it, because instead of being strictly just a failing of moral character and a failing of like humanity, really, or like sort of, I guess, altruism or empathy or all of these qualities, instead of being purely just that, it is all of those things, but stemming from a false belief.
Right.
And unfortunately, like, and with this, to me, it kind of cements that, well, no, it was all of course it was all of those things. We always knew it was all of those things. But you can't hide behind, oh, well, maybe they, like, maybe some people genuinely, no. Like, there was evidence at the time. There is no sort of, like, it was the thing of the time, because it was something you had to make yourself believe in spite of evidence. You know what I mean?
I mean, there's lots of things today that people believe in spite of evidence and do absolutely. Wholeheartedly yeah, believe in spite of evidence.
No, absolutely. No, yeah. Still, but when it comes to something like this, I feel like you want to not sanitize it, but to yourself, you want to be like, well, how can I make this awful thing not as bad so that I don't necessarily have to like consider living in the same world? And this is what bothers me, because like, I feel like if this is...
You educate about Nazis.
Yeah.
You're like, I really want to believe they really believed all those things. And weren't just actually just evil, but probably a lot of them were just evil. And then some of them also believed it.
Yeah. And I feel like people can take this, what we're talking about, out of context or misunderstand it. And I want to be clear that when we're talking about sort of Nazism and we're talking about slavery, all of those things are bad, obviously. Like, that is like, and bad is such is not even a strong enough word to describe it. But this sort of distinction we're making between sort of a genuine belief in something feeling more, not okay, but feeling more comfortable to believe rather than a disingenuous belief in something is, I think, just that it almost makes the pill easier to swallow, right? That like, okay, the world is horrible and people do horrible things to each other, but at least when people do horrible things, it doesn't just come from a place of lack of care for other people. Mm. Like there is a false belief there, and that false belief can be dealt with. But how can you deal with something that stems from a false belief? The false beliefs rise up to justify people's behavior. You know, it's just, that's the thing that really winds me up. But to move on, Banneker was wound up as well. Cause you know, like, he was obviously out there, he was trying to work for civil rights. He was doing sort of all of his work. He was writing almanacs. Do you guys know what almanacs are?
No.
basically like farmer's annuals. Genuinely like an annual for farmers. So it's like a sort of book that's made every year with information about sort of like when the sort of harvest season will be, like the eclipses, all of these, all of the different things that you can study, like basically for the following year. Lots of different information, really interesting sort of things. And Banneker wrote a bunch of them. And his first one, I think, he mailed an advanced copy of it to the Secretary of State, Thomas Jefferson, on August 19th, 1791. Because it was still in production, right?
Right.
He hand wrote it entirely again.
Oh, right.
Just as a big, like, FU to Thomas Jefferson. He sat and rewrote his entire book. So he could send an advance a copy of it to Thomas Jefferson before it was finished being published. Yeah. Along with the book was a 1400 word letter, which, you know, was basically having a go at Thomas Jefferson. Now it feels to me like this has been sanitized. Yeah. When I've been reading up about it, cause I think quite literally that Banneker playfully chided Thomas Jefferson and his views. And I find it very hard to believe that a black man in the late 1700s, who was never a slave because he was born free, but was very obviously against slavery and all for abolition, and also who worked very hard and was a very intelligent person, and also knew that Thomas Jefferson had said that black men were lesser intellectually. I find it hard to believe that someone that went through all of those experiences would playfully chide the Secretary of State. You know, like playfully, like, oh, Boris, you know, when you called gay people tank top wearing bum boys, that was a bit naughty, wasn't it? You should probably consider it. No, if like you'd say, come on, man, like what the hell are you doing?
Yeah,
properly having a go. I feel like again, a lot of this has been sort of sanitized to make it maybe a little bit more palatable for people that are reading it that are white. I don't have any like sort of solid evidence to prove that, because this is the only place that I can get it, but it doesn't necessarily add up. Basically, what my point is that the content is still the same, but the way that the content is spoken about seems to be to make it easier to sort of like easier to sort of like take for a white person that doesn't want to feel sort of guilty about the situation, right?
Or have their view of government ruined as
sure.
well.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And like, I'm not saying that white people should feel guilty for this, by the way, because you shouldn't. That's not how this works. So he wrote the 1400 word letter and rewrote his entire 48 page book and sent it to Jefferson. He was basically talking about abolition of slavery, and saying, you know, it shouldn't be a thing, blah blah blah. And he said that he hoped that he would readily embrace every opportunity to eradicate that train of absurd and false ideas and opinions which so generally prevail with respect to us. And he, you know, and he included his almanac. And in the letter, he said he was of the African race and a free man. And actually, in his almanac as well, I'm pretty sure at the start, he said it was from a black man as well. Like, this was not something that he wanted to hide. He wanted, I think with these, it seemed that he wanted to say to the people reading them, like, hey, fuck you. It seemed that he wanted to say to the people reading them, hey, F you, I'm a black man and I can, like,
look what I did.
Like, yeah. We are equals. Why are you not seeing this? And so apparently he stopped short of telling Jefferson to emancipate the men, women, and children that he enslaved, because Jefferson owned over 600 slaves during his lifetime. That was the one thing that he didn't, like, he said basically everything but that specifically. And it was to be fair, being a black man at that time, it's a risk to write to the Secretary of State and say, hey, you know, screw you. Right? Yeah. That's risky. Yeah. Very risky. And so, so I've actually bolded this. It wasn't playfully chided. It was respectfully chided, I'll read some of this out. Sir, I have long been convinced that if your love for yourself and for those inestimable laws which preserve to you the rights of human nature was founded on sincerity, you could not but be solicitous that every individual might with you equally enjoy the blessings thereof, neither could you rest satisfied short of their promotion from any state of degradation to which the unjustifiable cruelty and barbarism of men may be reduced to them. Essentially, if you're going to go by what you wrote down in the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, all that nonsense, if you're going to go by the words that you wrote down there, maybe slavery is bad, right? All men are born equal. I can't remember the exact.
All men are created equal.
All men are created equal. If you're going to go by that line, maybe you shouldn't be doing a bit of a slavery, right?
Yeah. That, yeah. I also don't think that he playfully or respectfully chided him. He just told him he's wrong.
Yeah.
That's not, chided is not the right word there.
Yeah. Mm, no.
It's just like, he wrote to the Secretary of State and was like, you are not being consistent with your own beliefs.
Yeah. Sir, I freely and cheerfully acknowledge that I am of the African race, and it is under a sense of the most profound gratitude to the supreme ruler of the universe that I now confess to you that I am not under the state of tyrannical thraldom and inhuman captivity to which many of my brethren are doomed, but that I have abundantly tasted the fruition of those blessings which proceed from that free and unequaled liberty with which you are favored, and which, I hope, you will willingly allow you have received from the immediate hand of that being. And that the present freedom and tranquility with which you enjoy, you have mercifully received, and that it is a particular blessing of heaven. Basically, like, hey, I'm a black man, I'm free, no other black people are, and, like, you know, we're all created equal under God, you're free. Maybe you want to look at the fact that you're free and most black people aren't.
This is the thing I find really, really surprising. So when we talk about, like, systemic racism, and people don't believe in that because they think there's no explicit laws that are explicitly like saying that black people and white people are different or whatever. But then, like, just take a little look around the world for a bit. Like, if you take a look around the world and, like, the majority of the people in the positions that are, like, powerful and pay loads of money are one color, and then the majority of people who are like, quite a lot of people who work in, like, disproportionate to the number of people who are that color in the country, are in lower paid jobs, harder jobs, jobs that work nights, jobs that involve serving other people. Like, unless you make up a belief that there's a difference between those people, which you can look up the science and there isn't, then what do you think is going on? What do you fill that gap with? I don't understand. Like, they're not saying there's some explicit thing, but they're just saying observe the world and go, oh.
They're just choosing it. Black people are just choosing it, I guess. You know? No, so just a few more things, and then we can finish up in a bit. But so Thomas Jefferson read the letter, he acknowledged it, and he responded, and he said that he took the liberty of sending your almanac to the Monsieur de Condorcet, the secretary of the French Academy of Sciences. And he said, because I consider it as a document to which your whole color had a right for their justification against the doubts of which have been entertained of them. Right. So what this says is essentially, hey, this is a really good science book. You did a good science book. Well done. I sent it to my French friend, who is a big science man. And I actually think that you did really right by your people, you know? You're a credit to your race. Well done. Which is just, as a man who has explicitly said black people are sort of less intelligent, inherently less intelligent, and who owned 600 slaves, that is just a slap in the face. Banneker then published Jefferson's letter alongside the original letter that he wrote in his 1793 almanac. And there was also another, I think there was another letter, or this is a longer excerpt from the letter from Jefferson to Banneker. It says, I thank you sincerely for the letter of the 19th and for the almanac that it contained. Nobody wishes more than I do to see such proofs as you exhibit that nature has given to our black brethren talents equal to those of the other colors of men, and that the appearance of a want of them is owing merely to the degraded condition of their existence both in Africa and America. I can add with truth that nobody wishes more ardently to see a good system commenced for raising the condition of both their body and mind to what it ought to be as fast as the imbecility of their present existence and other circumstance which cannot be neglected will admit. I have taken the liberty of sending your almanac to blah 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 because I consider you I consider a document to which your whole color had a right for their justification against the doubts of which have been entertained of them. Yeah, that's the whole letter that he sent. Basically, he came back saying, thanks for the letter. Look, I really want black people to be equal too. You know, I'd love for black people to be equal and to be sort of pushed up to their intellectual capacity. And, you know, and he then goes on to say that, like, you know, he says there that the appearance of want of them is owing merely, like, that he no one wishes more than him, that the appearance of want in them is owing merely to the degraded condition of their existence in both Africa and America. What that essentially means is that, look, man, I really hope that the reason that black people are so stupid and weak right now is because of the crappy conditions they've got in America and Africa. I really hope that. And I really hope that we can get them up to the level of everyone else if that's where they're supposed to be, whilst also owning 600 slaves and also saying that black people are less intelligent. Like, this just reads to me like I would hit Thomas Jefferson right in the face. Like, I would punch him
signaling
square in the jaw. Honestly, if I got that letter, I do not know how that man, I don't know how Banneker contained himself. I would, like, honestly, if I saw Jefferson, knock him out.
Yeah, because there's, like, there's hypocrisy, and then there's hypocrisy on another level. Like,
oh, yeah.
I hope that we don't use oil. I still own a car. I don't, however, own an oil refinery.
Mm.
Or, like, an oil well. Or, and I wouldn't, if I had loads of money, I wouldn't go and buy myself those things.
What is so frustrating here is he said that no one wishes more than me. He's not
no
saying
one wishes
that,
more than you. He's not saying that. Probably all the slaves do.
You should ask your 600 slaves, maybe. No, yeah.
Keep on here. He's not saying that I don't believe that black people are lesser because of the, you know, I don't believe that black people are inherently equal.
He's saying, I hope it is
no,
true.
Yeah, no one wishes more than me. I really hope, look, man, I really hope that the reason that black people are lesser is because of the crappy conditions in Africa and the UK. And that's baffling, because what they're saying, what he's saying there as well, is that it's black people's fault for the way that Africa is that yeah. led them to being like this, ignoring the fact that many of them, yes, they were sold into slavery from, like, by Africans. But if you look into it, the sort of conditions of slavery in Africa and the entire, like, sort of issue of slavery in the United States are very different things. Like, please, for the love of God, look into it. Because the racialized slavery in the US is a very, it's a different beast, really, right? So it's interesting that he's saying, like, oh, man, I really wish that, like, you guys were equal. And, like, I really hope that the reason you're not equal right now is because Africa sucks and because you're not treated great in America. But, like, it's just words. It's so frustrating.
The other thing is it sounds like the implication is that he hopes that's true,
yeah.
but also the other thing might be true.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, he's not, that's my point. He's not explicitly said, yeah, no, I agree with you. He said, I hope so. I hope so. Like, if I was to say to you, man, Luke, it really sucks that, like, you know, trans people right now aren't being treated equally, right? And actually, as the politician that you are, I think that your transphobic statements are really reprehensible.
Yeah.
You need to stop viewing trans people as inherently less valuable than cis people and stop
and
valuing...
I replied, well, Corey, I really hope that trans people are... Like, hang on, wait, no, you do words for me.
Yeah, that's like me saying, like, you need to realize that trans people are equal to cis people, that they are equally as valuable, and that you shouldn't be separating them sort of unnecessarily in order to sort of harm trans people. And you coming back and saying, look, Corey, thank you for your lovely message. You know, thank you for this very much. No one hopes more than me that trans people are equal to cis people, right? I hope that the reason that...
I hope it turns out that that's true.
I hope that the reason that...
I don't necessarily believe it yet.
I so hope that the reason that trans people are treated so terribly now is, you know, just due to transphobia and not due to the fact that trans people are inherently lesser. I hope their inherent lack of value nowadays is due to something that can be fixed. And I hope we can fix it.
And I hope it more than anyone.
I hope it more than anyone.
If you were to get everyone and ask them how much they hope it, I'm the one hoping it most.
Yeah, look, how about this? I've actually gone through all of my 600 slaves and asked them who hopes the most.
600 transgender slaves.
Who hopes? Me. I do.
Jesus. Oh, yeah. God. No, it's awful. Awful
silly
stuff.
Silly Thomas.
I'll skim past this because this is something that might be worth looking into. It's all in the description. Is the almanacs. I mentioned that he wrote almanacs and they're really cool. He wrote multiple of them. And he examined the world around him. He examined his farm and he wrote them down in these yearly books. And it also included commentaries, literature, and sort of like fillers that had political and humanitarian purpose, right? So it wasn't just a book about, hey, here's how you farm, here's when the best time to harvest, all that stuff is. It wasn't just that. It was also like, slavery is awful. Like, this needs to be done with the country. It was so cool. This is what I loved. Like, when I found out about this guy, I loved it. It's like, okay, you're a black man who escaped slavery and that you weren't born into slavery. Awesome. All right, very cool. Not only that, you were self-taught in like all of the sciences. Mm. Awesome. You discovered something about cicadas. Super cool. You wrote a bunch of books, not just about science, but also about sort of philosophy and sort of social justice at the time. Incredible. You went to the Secretary of State, who would become future president, and said, hey, screw you and your racism. Awesome. You surveyed DC, which is the capital of the... Like, awesome. All of this stuff is such... He's such a cool guy. The fact that he doesn't just focus on science, he focuses on like... everything. He had pages like an essay on the cosmos, a story about domestic life, a formula for tree medicine, words of wisdom. Like, there is so much in these almanacs. He didn't hide his race, which is insane, right? Like, if you're trying to sell something in the 1700s and you're black, you don't want people knowing you're black, because one, black people don't have money because they slaves, and two, white people don't want stuff from black people because they slaves, right? Like, it is insane that he put his face, and they sold well. I think they sold out as well. Had medical information, had the sort of when the tides were coming in and out.
Wow.
So much stuff. There was, it started with a testimony from the editors and from James McHenry, who was a statesman in Maryland. He said, I consider this Negro as fresh proof that the powers of the mind are disconnected with the color of the skin. That was one of the openings of the book. And it's like, hey, I'm black, and like, there is no connection between race and intelligence. I love that. Like, just the fact that he was so willing to be like, yeah, no, I'm not going to hide this. I'm not going to try and hide myself at all. I'm just going to do my thing and, like, speak out against all of this, like awful, awful stuff. It's incredible. And there were some people that said some not so great things about it, like, that had to bring his race into it in a sort of negative way. So, there weren't many publishers that could check all of his work because he did so much and he was very good at it. But there was a man named Rittenhouse who peer reviewed it. He was a scientist and a surveyor as well. He called the almanac's measurements a very extraordinary performance considering the color of the author.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Banneker obviously did not like this very much. Like, Rittenhouse was trying to compliment him, right? But like, look, you know, you're so good at podcasting for a ginger.
Yeah, thank
well
you.
Done.
He is,
job, buddy.
He is, to be fair.
He's great considering the color of his hair.
Considering
the color of his hair. Gosh. Banneker responded saying, I am annoyed to find that the subject of my race is so much stressed. The work is either correct or it is not. In this case, I believe it to be perfect. I love him so much.
Legend.
He's so cool.
Clap back.
And this was just
before she snapped.
This was before the almanac came out that he was getting all this stuff. And when it did come out, as I said, he published the letters that he had between himself and Jefferson, which is just such a power move, right? Like, the Secretary of State, you're just publishing that your private letters between you and him. Mwah, amazing, right? Perfect. He spoke about abolition in his first two almanacs, and he didn't really talk about it much afterwards. But really, I think that was because, historians think that's probably because it was dangerous to push that, because his state still allowed slavery. And you want to talk about abolition, but you also want to think of your own safety. Like, it was dangerous for him to be such a prominent black man who, you know, did so much good. And from 1794 onwards, he started talking, like, the way that he was talking about sort of the intelligence of black people came generally through just the fact that his almanacs were really bloody good. Like, they were just so tight, so solid. And he put a picture of himself on the cover, which is just, again, just like, yes, man. Like, just make something really good and put your face on it as a big, like, middle finger to those people.
Yeah.
So he died. He never married. He just did studies throughout his life. By 1797, his almanacs stopped selling as well. So he stopped publishing them. But he sold off a lot of his farm to the Ellicotts, who were his neighbors, just to sort of keep himself like afloat, essentially. But he stayed to live. He's continued living in the same cabin that he used to live in. And then October 9th, 1806, after a morning walk that he usually went on, he died in his sleep just before his 75th birthday. And all of the items that he had that he'd loaned from his neighbor, George Ellicott, because he borrowed some stuff, they were all returned to him by his nephew, which is just, I love that he's just such a, like, he he was like, okay, I'm going to borrow this stuff from you. And when I'm dead, once I can either pay you back or when I'm dead, you can get it back. And mm-hmm. that was his wishes. He was like, yeah, give it back. And they did. It's so cool. Like, he's just morally so sound, intellectually incredible.
Yeah.
The balls on him to say that to Thomas Jefferson. Amazing.
Who published his almanacs?
He did. Oh, sorry, not he did. I don't know the exact names of the publishers, but let me see.
That's surprising, even that they were published.
That they let him.
Like, how does that work? His face
on I think I mentioned the name of the publisher. Hold on, let me just check.
You probably did. Yeah, but I just mean in terms of, like, that's pretty big. Like, will it have been turned down by other publishers at the time, do you think?
It probably would have been turned down by other publishers. No, I can't. I don't have the publisher here. But, I mean, they were publishing it. I mean, I don't know whether he had to lie about who he was to get it to get it through. But I think, bear in mind that we do think of this time as being everyone was racist, and everyone was probably a little bit racist, right? I mean, everyone's still a bit racist now, really. But I think that there were some people that were willing to take a risk because, I mean, the work was so good. And this is what's frustrating, is that he had to be, one of the best to be considered to do that, right? Like, if his work was not perfect, then you probably wouldn't have, like, there's no room for mediocrity if you're in that position, right? Yeah. Whereas if you're, I don't want to say this, if you're a white man, you can get away with mediocrity.
Yes. Right?
Sure.
I'm sure we've all seen evidence of that. I'm not saying that other people can't get away with it, but generally.
Every morning, man, look in the mirror.
And you'll tell yourself, I got away with that line.
There it is. The evidence I need.
So, as I said, he died on October 9th, 1806. And then the Tuesday afterwards, October 11th, there was sort of burial going on. So it was at the family burial ground, just a few yards away from his house. He was buried. And during the service, and I'm going to read this verbatim, during the service, mourners were startled to see his house had caught on fire, quickly burning down. Nearly everything was destroyed, including his personal effects, furniture, and wooden clock, which worked until the day, 2 days after he died, because it burnt down.
Oh.
The cause of the fire was never determined.
Spontaneous clock combustion.
The cause of the fire was never determined. Black man who has got all of his stuff, who has done a lot of solid work, dies, and 2 days later his house burns down.
Poltergeist.
Racist poltergeist.
I don't have solid evidence. I
agree. So you're saying it was arson by some horrible person.
I'm saying that to me seems the most likely thing. Cause of the fire was never determined.
Why didn't they do it whilst he was alive?
Well, you could do it while he's alive, but you could, the way I'm viewing it is that someone could take their opportunity now that he's dead to burn all of his effects, so there's not any record, not any more, because he's got all of his stuff there, so there's less of a record of him, right?
Yeah.
So the White House history page says, in many ways, his story is a historical anomaly. And he was often really frustrated with how much attention people paid to his race instead of looking at how good his work was itself. I'm just going to read some of this verbatim as well. No matter how unique his talents or special his accomplishments, contemporaries and critics always reverted to a discussion of his skin color. There was no talking about Benjamin Banneker, even in praise, without remarking on his background. He could never truly know whether his almanac was worthy of publication on its own merit or just because it served a moral cause. Though he was never enslaved, Benjamin Banneker was never free to be just Benjamin Banneker. He was always Benjamin Banneker, a free black, or Benjamin Banneker, a sable descendant of Africa.
That's interesting that they said a moral cause. Back then, so because you get that a lot when the questioning goes like, oh, has this person got this job because it's they're a token, and it's like, obviously that's a horrible way of thinking about things.
Well, if you're pushing for abolition, then you want to make the case that black people are not intellectually inferior. So this not intellectually inferior black man is very useful to that cause. So I understand where that's coming from.
But I assume. Oh, okay. So there were people who were
abolitionists.
There were white people who were abolitionists.
Oh, yeah,
so they'd
absolutely,
be used
yeah.
by the cause.
Yeah.
But then, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's really lovely that he also wants to know. He's not just happy with the success. He wants it to be success that he's earned as well on his own merit, which is wonderful.
It's a story that really frustrated me, but it's also just cool. And I really hope that, people... If you're in school right now, tell your teachers about this guy. If they don't, if they've not taught you about him already. I mean, I don't know what's taught in American schools, but if this guy isn't taught about in American schools, then that's really a failure, right? I mean, I would hope so. And yeah, it kind of sucks that there's not many records of him and his house burned down mysteriously. Like, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist here, but like, the fact that his house burned down 2 days after he died mysteriously and no one knows the cause, gotta be racist, right?
It's gotta be.
Gotta be.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, that's Benjamin Banneker. He's just a real cool guy who, honestly, I just when I found out about the Thomas Jefferson thing, I was like, this is I'm so in this episode. Yeah. Yes. Awesome. Well, that's pretty much the end of the show. Other than one thing left, do you guys know what it is?
Oh, no.
Would it be a quick fire quiz round?
It's a quick fire on quiz.
That's it. Dun, 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 dun. Benjamin edition, I guess.
I know you want to say black edition, Jam. I was going to say
racism edition, but that was a bit...
There's a few of those.
It's a bit broad, I think. Yeah.
We've already had a few of those.
Yeah, you're right. We've got a lot of bloody racism on this show.
We have, Corey. You need to tone it down.
Okay. I'm sorry. Look, next time I will start... I'll stop talking about the racism in science. It's real. It's really just not worth it, is it? My question for you both is...
Sorry, I didn't mean that.
No, I know. Okay. I know. So my question for you both is,
yeah,
what are your buzzers? Very good buzzer, Jam.
Thank you.
Luke, what's your buzzer?
Ooh.
Just realized I've run out of liquid, so I'm going to have to fake it.
That's fine. So the rules of this are as normal. So the first person to buzz in with the correct answer after I finished asking the question wins. What do they win, Jam?
Nothing.
That's right. Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
So my question for you is, which United States city did Benjamin Banneker suck?
We both didn't wait till you finished.
We didn't wait till
I like to buzzing for me, Jam.
Luke.
Was it Washington, D.C.?
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct.
Yeah. I would have gotten that well.
You would have gotten it if you'd listened to the rules.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, but it's just the rules.
You should say them more often. I might know.
You're right. It's Curry's fault, Jam.
Yes, everything is my fault. No, so that is the story of Benjamin Banneker. Thank you all very much for listening to this. Thank you for dabbling in a little bit of understanding about how bad racism is. And unfortunately, I mean, I guess one thing I want to say before we properly end this is that a lot of this story is familiar. You know, this is still stuff that seems to be kind of going on today. Obviously not the slavery, but the way that black people are treated as there is still the undercurrent of believing they're inferior. And if someone rises up to be sort of more than that, they're often spoken about as being an exception to the rule, which isn't great. So maybe, you know, look into that, think about it. But also, thank you very much for watching. Before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thanks to executive producers Ashley Muller and Finty Z. And also, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.